Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 297. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight for a two-man show, we have Harrison Milfeld.
Howdy, everybody. This is going to be our feature right now. I mean, I guess, I don't know, what is it the media is telling us right now, that Nintendo is doomed? Do I hear that correct?
To be fair, I think we hear that an awful lot, regardless of what's coming out of Nintendo. But we're going to talk about that in our kind of special feature for tonight, which is titled Nintendo Forecast Adjustment Report.
We're going to adjust Nintendo's finances by ourselves, basically.
Yeah. I mean, because this is kind of the preemptive warning about the financial report, because this isn't the financial report. That's obviously will come at the end of March, at the end of the fiscal year.
So many goofy things have come out of this right now. I mean, I'm taking it basically my same idea where it's like, I mean, I've just kind of gone by the whole thing. It's like, you know, yeah, they're kind of in trouble, but not big, big, big trouble. And let's just say there's been a lot of really weird rumors coming out of both, like, anonymous sources and even NeoJaff, for instance. It's just gotten to the point where it's crazy town right now.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was just about to say crazy town because I saw a mock console today.
You saw that? Oh.
It was obviously fake just by, well, just the fact of it itself, but just by going through the specs of the machine and so on. But it's so early. I mean, this is meant to be like the pre-E3 stuff nearer to the time in the first place.
What would be your reaction? What would be your reaction if they just came to E3, just showed up on there? It's like, well, we have the special surprise. Here's this new console. My only reaction would be like, you're giving us the middle finger right now, aren't you?
Nah, they're not going to do that. But we know what they could do. And I'm just going to say this, and we can talk about it when we get to the segment itself.
Yeah, a little cliffhanger there.
Tonight's show, we're going to have the normal three-part structure. We're going to start with what we've been playing. We then have some listener mail to discuss. And, as we've already mentioned, we're going to finish off with the Nintendo Forecast Adjustment Report. To kickstart what we've been playing, Harrison, if you would like to take the lead on this one.
Mine's a little short here, but I had mentioned to Lewis on the beginning of this is I haven't been able to buy anything because I've been switching banks, so I have not been able to use my debit card or even checks, for instance. So my money's just been kind of floating out in nowhere land for a little bit. So I've been kind of finishing. I tried to attempt to finish the Mystery Funhouse Marathon in Mario 3D World for the, probably 100th time. I mean, but like what we'd mentioned in the last podcast, is little things I've been messing up on trying to screw my rhythm, because you know how when you're buying, like going through some of these hard Mario levels, once you kind of get it down, you have a rhythm going into it, but yet if you go away for a little bit for a while, like I did in 10 days or so, I get back into it, and I'm just really rusty. So, I mean, I think after beating Champions Road, I just said to myself, you know what, I think I'm done here right now. So I'm going to push you to side until hopefully some DLC comes in the near future. And that's not despite I'm giving up. It's just, I think at that point I'm like, you know, there's other games waiting right now I think I need to play. I mean, I haven't even finished Wind Waker HD right now. I mean, I have these pile of games that I've gotten from November and December that just need to do it. What's keeping that right now is Wonderful 101, which, of course, you know, I praised a bit in our top 10 countdown last time. And most of you be saying, like, well, you haven't finished it yet? It's like, well, from what I had seen from the game, I think it was justifiable enough. I mean, I don't think there was probably anything going a little further into it that really would have dampened my opinion. Because even though, one of the rules, especially for gaming reviews, whatever, is just kind of finishing the game to critique it, even though there's exceptions, knowing what you're kind of get afterwards. In the case of Wonderful 101, it finally hit me. It finally hit its stride to me right now where I'm actually, you know, not being frustrated, and I'm easily getting these controls down, putting these Unite morphs out you know, with just the tip of a hat. And basically, and I'm really enjoying the story in this one, even it's so corny and quirky at the point, whatever. I mean, I was just thinking this was just going to be kind of a one-off little story that you just push the side and just, here's the action. But one thing I have not been doing a lot, though, is in between, you know, with the operations, it's basically split into three levels, like, you know, Operation A, B, and C, and you go into the Wonderful Mart, and you're able to buy and stock up on items. I haven't been buying anything, and yet I'm still getting this far.
Yeah, I mean, the story's set up in a weird way, because I don't think it really incentivizes you to use it.
It's, I don't know, because I check these things out, and I'm like, okay, that's too expensive, why do I need this, I mean, I've even gotten by a little bit. I mean, yeah, I die a lot. For now, I've able to kind of get to the point of strategies when you're facing certain bosses, but now, tell me this, though. When you're facing certain mini-bosses, does it really correlate to the color of whatever, you know, one of the wonderful 101s that you have? Like, for instance, I feel like if I see one of the enemies that has red or blue or even a little tint of yellow, I guess that just means, like, yes, you have to use Wonder Yellow or Wonder Red. Or is it just like, hey, whatever you see spikes, use Whip. Or whenever you see, like, a turtle, use the hammer.
Yeah, I think they match up for some things, but not necessarily all. But yeah, I think, as you mentioned, like, the spikes usually have that sort of blue tint to it, I believe?
Yeah.
And yeah, if so, then you can use that. I don't think, like the hammer's color-coded, or in terms of the enemies you would use it for, or the environment effects. So yeah, it could be also something that Holly brought up in the last episode. There is a bit of inconsistency in this game, despite how good it is in areas.
I'm going to say the worst enemy in this game are those tanks.
Oh, are those ones with the kind of armored fronts?
I hate those things so much. It doesn't matter if, like, first instance when I see it, Unite Morph Sword, knock them down. They charge me. Lose all my members right now. Gather them up.
Well,
it's...
Wait a minute. You have, like, the shield spongy power-up, yeah?
Oh, the Unite Guts?
That's the one.
Yeah, I use that, but the thing is, I get to that point where I just don't use it as much right there. It's like I fail to use it whenever they're charging me at some point. And I did buy the one where it's the upgrade to the Unite Guts where it releases spikes, but I don't know how to activate it.
It took me a while to realize the Unite Guts was actually an effective method to fight those types of things, and when I realized, I felt really stupid, because I was really struggling at those type of armored enemies to begin with. Yeah, as you mentioned, though, yeah, some of those things you pick up from the store, some of them are quite cool, but some of them are just a bit abstract in how you actually use them.
That's not only that. I mean, aside from the tanks kind of putting the only few one of my list of most frustrating video game enemies is just when you have those few boss battles with, like, Vorkin and his entire gang of, like, essentially an evil, wonderful 101, like, a gang, whatever. I'm on normal mode, which I said before, is the Platinum Games is their hard mode, like, really hard mode. I'm dying constantly half the time on this whatever, but, you know, with the way Wonderful 101 does, it places you back to it doesn't start you all the way to the beginning with your health all the way up. Their enemy's health all the way fully regenerated. It's back to the point where you last hit them, which is, I'm not sure if it's a questionable game design input or not, but I never found the trick to kind of easily beat Vorkin and all that. I mean, I did, but just to do it quickly.
Some bosses do seem to have a clear strategy to them, and some seem to be just a bit of brute force, but you're not entirely sure if you're missing a trick or not, because it's taking a lot longer than it should be.
That's the thing. It's like, I feel like, okay, these are taking so long for me to beat, and I'm like, am I just doing something wrong, or is it just how, you know, it's designed?
Yeah, it's hard to tell, really. I'm going to have to give this game a second run through.
But, you know, that's what I've been kind of going basically through. It's just, you know, and it's hitting its stride, really. And, you know, I'm really appreciating it. It's truly one of those games where it's difficult to master its controls, but once you get it down, you are just unstoppable. But no, Lewis, I heard you've actually picked up a latest eShop title that I know that you've been bugging me to pick up.
I'm not alone in picking this one up in the Infendo Cruise, but I have picked up Dr. Luigi for the Wii U eShop, and to be fair, if you've played Dr. Mario, you kind of know what you're getting yourself into. But the cool thing about this edition, although it's not really exclusive in this fact, because they did have a previous edition which had this, but it has online capabilities, so it's got both online leaderboards and online multiplayer. And the fact we now have a Nintendo system with a friend system built in, it's, you know, it's actually quite easy to get a game up and start playing with a friend who has this game, which is great news. And I was also just kind of reminded, I think half of people's nostalgic memories for this game, if not more, is purely down to the music itself. Even more so than the game. I think if the original game didn't launch that catchy fever and chill music, the nostalgia for Dr. Mario wouldn't be around. Even with that said and done, the gameplay is pretty addictive, especially if you can get a human opponent together. But it also has some pretty quirky modes. Thankfully, I've got the game running here, so I can just run through them, which is quite handy to have a gamepad-type system. The new Luigi mode is called Operation L. You have L-shaped pills, so you have two of the regular-type pills kind of bolted together in a Tetris-type L-shape. And you basically, that's the only type of shape you get, and you rotate them around as you would, and you match them together. I guess the tricky bit is they are technically two separate types of pills cornered together, so it is quite tricky to match them up. The handy thing is, though, in this mode, if the two matching pills have the same kind of three colours running in one of the vertical slants of the L, then you can use that to really quickly get rid of one of the germs itself, because you only need to have four of the of a single colour to destroy them. So if you've got the right shape block, you can destroy a germ with a single L block, which is pretty cool. But beyond that, I mean, that's the only difference in Operation L. They've got the normal classic mode, which is called Retro Remedy. Mm. And that's it's pretty much the same as you would remember. It has the original music from both choices. And what I should also mention is Operation L has two new types of music, which are both pretty cool, but I'm not sure they're quite as good as the originals.
So the tunes that they have in here right now, as far as the music, is just, you know, be it different remixes or different variations, they are just as catchy as ever.
So if you play the classic mode, you can choose between Fever or Chill, and they're basically modern versions of those classic tunes. But if you play Operation L, you have two new music tracks, which are catchy in their own right, but it's too early to say if they'll stand the same test of time as those other two will. But you also have this new kind of fancy touchscreen mode called Germ Buster, in which you you completely control the game with the Wii U gamepad's touchscreen. And you can either have it in a horizontal position or a vertical position. And the screen represents the actual, I guess, the gameplay area itself, so you can see where the pills drop down. And you can, as they appear on top on the screen, you can use your finger to drag them into the correct position, but you can't kind of move them back up. So you can speed them down, you can curve them into a position while it's going down, but you can't use it to, you know, move them back up indefinitely. And it starts off really simple, and it has nice, relaxed music. It's kind of really slow motion versions of those music tracks. However, when you start getting further into the Germ Buster mode, they start creating multiple pills at the same time at the top of the screen falling down.
Basically, isn't this kind of implemented as well, like, if you're playing against somebody else, if you get such a good combo mode, more that goes over to the next side?
I think this is the one mode it won't let you play multiplayer in. Ironically, not even online, which doesn't make much sense, because obviously it's understandable why you can't play local, because you need a gamepad each. But you might as well put the online mode in. But what's the cool thing is because those multiple, like, pills appear on the screen, you have to quickly, you know, drag one into the right position while the other one's still falling down. So you've got to finish that one, then grab the other pill and then move it where you need. And eventually you can have up to three pills appearing at the same time. It's a pretty cool mode. I do like that, but it's a shame that one's not online. But the Operation L and the Retro Remedy modes are. I do have to kind of admit publicly, though, although we did say we're going to do some sort of Infendo Dr. Luigi challenge.
We need to do that, especially right now, and I'm up for the challenge, though. I mean, this is, obviously, I mean, when you think when it was first announced, thinking like, oh, it's just a Dr. Mario with a fresh coat of paint, that's it. But, you know, with what you're explaining right now is that they've kind of, you know, able to change things around to kind of make this fresh, especially, you know, Luigi's version of being here. I mean, it took him this long to get his, you know, doctoral license, or doctoral degree, so, I mean, it has to actually pay off.
Exactly. And, yeah, I think the simple thing of being able to play it online is a big difference in this game, because it makes me want to play it just single player more as well, so I just get my general Dr. Luigi skills up. Whereas if it was just kind of, because I remember having it on my old, real old Game Boy Classic, I think there's the game can only hold you so much when you're just competing against yourself on a leaderboard. And so you feel, you know, why are you pouring your time into this game when you're really not going to get anything to show for it? So it is cool to, later on, if you feel you do get good at the game, is jump on online and prove your skills. However, on that note, I played a couple of friendly games with Holly.
And who was victorious?
The score was a triumphant 5-0. However, it was more triumphant for Holly, because I didn't win any games out of that.
Oh, come on.
However, I have been practicing since, and that was technically a friendly game, so I feel I'm gonna catch Holly with her guard down next time, and I'm hoping we'll see those scores reversed. I'm not sure how well that mind trickery is going to work, so I think I'm going to actually have to dedicate some extra time into Dr. Luigi to actually become good at the game. I mean, I've also been playing Bravely Default, but I don't have a huge amount more to say about the game beyond that it is really good.
Is this the demo or the retail?
Oh, no, I've been playing on the retail game.
Okay, I think... Wait, the retail version came out, like, long ago in Europe?
It came out in December in Europe. I can't remember whereabouts in December it landed. I didn't actually play much of the demo, because it's made out, like, although it is all separate content, it's made out of quests, and you don't really do that in the main game, which is quite bizarre. But I would still recommend the demo to anyone interested in the game, because obviously, one, it's free, and two, that if you do like it, you get to carry over some stuff into the full game, which is pretty cool. It's got really great graphics, beautiful music. It just feels like a really kind of classic Super Nintendo generation RPG with a load of modern tweaks to it and brought up to date. I'm having a great time in that game so far.
It's just one of those games I really need to finally pick up on there, because it's just finally kind of getting to the point where I just really need to kind of just brace myself a little bit and just jump back in, knowing that the 3DS is finally going to be getting a good showing of probably maybe some good JRPGs.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks like that. And, well, we had a few good candidates last year, but it looks like we're going to get some more RPG action this year, which is pretty cool.
Should be. I mean, this is looking very good as it is.
And yeah, I mean, the fact that there's the sequel in the work for Bravely Default, and there's comments from the developers that they would like to keep this series going, as long as obviously fans keep picking up the game. So it looks like, I think they even want to go all Ubisoft on it and turn it to an annual franchise if they can get away with it. Which I would terribly mind, to be fair. I mean, we don't really see that very often in the JRPG arena.
No, we don't. And, you know, that's kind of a genre that really hasn't been as popular for, like, the last 10 years.
I've got a little secret hope, really, that this kind of replaces the Crystal Chronicles weird branding. And so, like, Bravely Default can be, like, the Nintendo-branded Squeenix RPG series. And so hopefully they could do it, whether they're like Bravely spin-offs or just full games also onto the home consoles as well as on the 3DS. That would be pretty cool. But yeah, it's got you know, it's got really nice charm to the game as well, and pretty fancy battle system.
Well, I will be waiting for you on that, and hopefully Dr. Luigi once I finally get those downloaded.
Okay, I think that's going to finish off what we've been playing, and so we'll move on now to our listener mail. So we have 3 questions. And the first one is from the comments on the website, and it's from FRX, who writes, "Why don't you guys talk about the differences or similarities between the Wii U and the GameCube? The podcast number 293 briefly touched on the subject. I think it's interesting to know how they compare or do not compare at all. Launch titles, early decisions by Nintendo, third-party support, and how it evolved in later stages of its life cycle, and, of course, the possible results of selling less units than projected." Okay, so this almost merges onto our feature topic, so I think we'll focus more so on the similarities between games and software and the other bits and pieces around between the Wii U and the GameCube. And purely for, you know, direct comparison's sake, I've brought up a list here of both the GameCube US launch and the Wii U's US launch. And I'll go through both quickly now. So for GameCube US launch, we had All-Star Baseball 2002, Batman Vengeance, Crazy Taxi, Dave Mirra Freestyle BMX 2, Disney's Tarzan Untamed, Luigi's Mansion, Madden NFL 2002, NHL Hits 2002, SSX Tricky, Star Wars Rogue Squadron 2 Rogue Leader, Super Monkey Ball, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, and Wave Race Blue Storm. So quite a varied mix there, really. Definitely an improvement from the previous launch they had on the N64.
I'm willing to say, I mean, even though I would go on when people were buying consoles at launch, it is a given fact that console launches are not that great when it comes to offering whatever games you get in there. You're only probably going to get maybe one or maybe two out of there, probably. I think the GameCube was the last good launch that we had for a game console. I could pinpoint six titles out of there that you could easily pick up at launch, and yeah, I'm guilty. I picked up six titles of those.
Yeah, I was just about to remind you of that statement there, because I think that one came out last week, if not the week before. Although I did quickly compare it to the N64, or I think it had two games in US when it launched? Was it just Mario and Pilot Wings, I believe?
Yes, it was, which I find really, I could have swore, well, didn't Empire, Shadows of the Empire release for that as well during that, or was that about a month later?
Oh, that was a bit later on, I think. Yeah, I think it was just those two games for its US launch. Although, I mean, you can't question the quality of Mario 64, and I would say it had the better launch game out of these two. But yeah, it's hard to compare one really high quality game to a larger selection of good or great games. Okay, but before we get too carried away, I'll read out now a list of the Wii U US launch titles, which will also include some digital software, which I think is only fair. Assassin's Creed 3, Batman Arkham City Armored Edition, Ben 10 Omniverse, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, Chasing Aurora, Darksiders 2, Epic Mickey 2, The Power of 2, ESPN Sports Connection, FIFA Soccer 13, Funky Barn, Game Party Champions, Just Dance 4, Little Inferno, Madden NFL 13, Mass Effect 3 Special Edition, Mighty Switch Force Hyperdrive Edition, Nano Assault Neo, NBA 2K13, New Super Mario Bros. U, Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge, Nintendo Land, Rabbids Land, Scribblenauts Unlimited, Sing Party, Skylanders Giants, Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, Tank, 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 Tekken Tag Tournament 2 Wii U Edition, Transformers Prime, the game, Trine 2 Director's Cut, Warriors Orochi Free Hyper, Wipeout 3, Your Shape Fitness Evolved 2013, and finally, Zombie U. That was quite a mouthful.
That was. A few bit of shovelware and a few underperforming ports. And the thing is, when you mentioned that the GameCube, though, is that thing actually, I mean, specs-wise, it was performing even better as far as, what's inside the box than even what the PS2, and kind of gave even the Xbox itself probably a run for its money. I mean, you could have good ports for, third-party ports and still look good on there. I mean, even though third-party support for that console dried up by the tail end of its, life cycle. And this, you're just having these different ports that are, sadly enough, still last-gen.
Numbers-wise, in terms of launch titles, Wii had about three times as many launch games as the GameCube did. However, what you mentioned about a lot of them are technically ports from the previous generation is a very valid point. You also mentioned GameCube's third-party support kind of tailed out.
Third-party.
Yeah, exactly. Its third-party support tailed out at the end of its generation. However, it was a very different situation to what we're seeing over on the Wii U with its third-party support. Because I think the GameCube had, although it might just be because of what we're seeing with the Wii U, had fairly decent third-party support, or at least in comparison to the Wii U. It seemed to have most of the main publishers, if not all the main publishers, were supporting the GameCube in some fashion. And it seemed at least most of the big third-party games would come out for the GameCube in a pretty standard version compared to what the Xbox and the PlayStation 2 was getting. Well, with the situation we have with the Wii U, it seems that the only major, really big publisher which is supporting Wii U is Ubisoft, and Activision supporting it with pretty much just Call of Duty.
You could say Sega's on there, but then again,
and Skylanders.
You could say Sega's on there as well, but it's more of a collaborative effort with them and first-party titles.
True, but Sega doesn't really make as many games as, say, some of the real top-tier publishers push out over the year. So in terms of just comparing these two consoles, how do we kind of feel, if we forget about the actual sales numbers at this point, How do we feel Nintendo's doing in terms of... Let's start with their own first-party games.
Right now, okay, for the first year, first going, we had Nintendo Land and New Super Mario Bros. U. Then later on, about like the drought began, we had LEGO City Stories Undercover. Or LEGO City Stories, I'm getting the 3DS one confused.
Undercover.
Then we had WarioWare. Then we had, I believe, what was it, New Super Luigi U, which is essentially just DLC, and Pikmin 3, Wonderful 101, Wind Waker HD, I know I'm probably forgetting something right now, Mario 3D World. Compare that to what the GameCube, even the GameCube had probably after that at a year's length. We had, what was it, 6. 6 first-party titles before the end of 2001. I'm going to count Rogue Squadron 2, even though that was developed by LucasArts, but that was a first-party exclusive, and Factor 5 was exclusive even at that time to Nintendo. I'm thinking hard right now. We had about like 5-6 good first-party titles, one of which being exclusive on there. Next year we had, you know, Nintendo's own NBA series, which was NBA Courtside 2002, which, of course, they abandoned because Left Field Studios, I think... left as a second party developer. Then months later, I think, what was it, we got Eternal Darkness, then in August of that year, in 2002, we got Super Mario Sunshine, Star Fox Adventures in the fall, Animal Crossing, and then, of course, Metroid Prime in November. And I think I'm forgetting one other first-party title we had in that month, and I'm trying to think of it.
I think we also had Resident Evil Zero pop up at that same time.
We had Resident Evil Zero in the fall, and we had Resident Evil, the remake, in the fall there. So there, we had that. And not only that, we actually had some good, decent, you know, third-party offerings, like, you know, Time Splitters 2, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4. I'm just going by, basically, the third-party software that we had that was actually a lot better than what we had, probably, you know, as compared to today. You know, here, it's day and night, you know. The third-party offerings that you have are just not as a par to what your competitors are doing right now. And yet, they're not as selling as well. Even on those consoles, they still sold well.
Okay, I mean, in terms of the actual first-party software, I think numbers-wise, there's actually more stuff on the Wii U. I think the main problem is it's stuff which doesn't feel as unique. Because we have things like New Super Mario Bros. U, New Super Luigi U, we've got things like, obviously, the Wii Sports, Wii Party, Wii Fit. We got a remake of The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. We got another Mario game in Mario 3D Worlds. I think in terms of actual, just raw numbers of the actual content they're pushing out, I think they've managed to get in a position where they are actually pumping out more.
Well,
it's just we're not getting these, like, really big, unique experiences.
That's to say, you're not getting those really out there titles or those, like, variety that we had. I mean, between those months that we even had a few third-party offerings for the GameCube, we got an Eternal Darkness, we got a Resident Evil remake. You know, those are things that we got, like, right there, just to hold us over.
Exactly. It does feel that they're spreading themselves a bit thin in terms of the first year for the Wii U. It feels like they're trying to play too safe and making sure they're providing a little bit of this for this audience, a little bit of that for that audience, but not any particular unique grand masterpiece which you can, you know, point at, oh, this is what the system can do. And if we move to sales, where it gets a bit trickier because it's a bit foggier as well, but we can say for certain the Wii U isn't performing as well as the GameCube did.
Not at all.
No, I mean, we don't actually have the NPD numbers for, you know, this holiday, which is going to be the most important thing here, because even the GameCube kind of really fell flat after its initial holiday season. But it wasn't as bad as the Wii U. It kind of started peaking up as the year went on, whereas the Wii U has kind of stayed flat for most of the year and has gone up considerably over the holiday season. We just don't know how significant that is at this point. So it's a bit tricky to compare the sales numbers. I just want to also, before we close this one off, is just one of our general feelings about how the console's doing overall in terms of, you know, it's been out for a year and a bit now. And I'll be honest, if I was completely isolated from the press, I would think the Wii is actually doing quite well, which I know it's not.
It's just, yeah, it's just compared to the competitors, though, it's, you had that year start, and yet you think you should be at least a couple million units ahead of them, but they're not.
Of course, yeah, if we're looking at the numbers on that side, but I'm just looking at like my Wii U library, and it's part of the times it's in, but it has a load of download games installed directly onto it. I've got quite a nice stack of disc games, and I play it quite a lot. I find that the system really does oddly suit my lifestyle quite well. I like the fact that I can take the gamepad and have my like private console session going if I need it, and in the same system can also display, you know, great HD graphics on the TV. And it's also a perfect system for having mates over and parties and so on. There's a lot of great games for up to five players, and it can in a positive way do this all the previous stuff that we could, as in it does have those HD remakes of sports and those mini games in Wii Fit, and Wii Party's pretty good as well. But let's not forget the original Nintendo Land, and even Game & Wario has some funky multiplayer modes. And obviously it's got, again, it can also be a sour point, the Virtual Console itself. But the fact it's got full backwards compatibility to the Wii's Virtual Console and just the Wii Disc games. I mean, this is the game I play when I have friends. The system I play when I've got friends over, and I do have access to other systems. So in terms of me personally, I think this, I know it's going to sound really silly, but I think the system's positioned right for me as a Nintendo fan. But if we look at the numbers, it's not good for Nintendo. Simple as that. It's apparently not the right system for the right time. How about you, Harrison?
As far as sales, it's, I mean, I feel like we can talk more about this one other feature right now. Again, it's coming off the fact of the Wii success. They feel in the 3DS they're trying to do the same thing over again, yet the market's changing. And that's all I'm going to say. I mean, I can say more probably later on. I mean, that's all I can say.
That's fair enough.
So
on a very basic level, not including the sales, pretend that we don't know that information. So this point in on both the Wii U and the GameCube, what's doing better?
At this time, the GameCube was doing better.
That's fair enough. To be fair, we would have Smash on the GameCube, wouldn't we? That wasn't too long. We had the original Pikmin. And Luigi's match pretty cool. I think it's winning a lot of me at the Wii U is because of it's playing off nostalgia, to be fair. Because I'm thinking if I rewind back into my GameCube time now, I have a lot of just brand new experiences like the original Pikmin. So I would have to side with GameCube as well on this little conversation, which I guess makes sense with the situation we're in. But I also just want to really put out there that the Wii U is just a good system. There's going to be a lot of kind of negative press around the subject, really.
It's just missing its potential, that's it.
Yeah.
And we can talk a little bit more later on as we have quite a few... Yeah, we have quite a few other, about two more, yeah, I believe, more questions on here. And,
Yeah, we do.
I'll take this next one. One surprisingly comes from the Miiverse. Did you get a hold of this one, or did Holly?
No, this one came through my direction.
All right. This one comes from Miiverse handle, Roboxer, if I'm saying that right. His question is, Ubisoft and Nintendo, I bought Splinter Cell and Assassin's Creed 4 for Wii U, but I don't think many people did. Do you think we will continue to see these series come to Nintendo fans? Well, I think this kind of bridges off from the conversation we had about third parties of the GameCube as compared to the Wii U right now, but Ubisoft is, you know, until they keep, you know, they'll still continue to support being the only huge third party to help support Nintendo on the Wii U, yeah, I think we'll still continue to see these, but unless the sales kind of continue to dwindle, I think we may be seeing less of these.
Yeah, it's going to be a trick on the cool, because Ubisoft has never dropped support, and to my understanding of a Nintendo system, at least not with its real top-tier franchises. I'm going to have to agree with Roblox here that I can't see or can't imagine these current games selling well at all on the Wii U. And I struggle to think that they're actually making a profit with the Wii U SKUs. Just because who owns a Wii U but doesn't own a 360 or a PS3 or one of the new consoles? I've got to imagine that market is almost nothing. And so the Wii U version, unfortunately, is normally hampered in some way or another, or it's usually oddly a bit more expensive or something or another, or if you've already tied into a certain franchise on another system, you've got your friends attached to it, or you've got achievements, or you've got some other hooks in place that you might as well carry on playing that game on that system you already have. On the other side, Ubisoft has been awfully, I guess, faithful is the word to Nintendo. I think they will keep bringing these games out, and I think they see it as a kind of a sign of strength on their side that they can provide their game on all the major platforms, and I think they do like their relationship with Nintendo. And despite what happened with Rayman Origins, Rayman Legends earlier on in the year, or I guess over last year, I think they want to keep their relationship strong with Nintendo.
It's integral to this console's success. If they drop, then Nintendo better start pumping out probably, you know, as many first-party titles as they can.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the next big Ubisoft game coming out to the Wii U and all other major consoles is going to be Watch Dogs. And in theory, the Wii version could be really great for it, because the game's all around hacking and using your mobile phone as a device to hack other things. And the Wii U version is going to be the only version where they know every player is going to have a touchscreen in the middle of their controller, and that just makes so much sense for this game. But they haven't yet shown off what that's going to be used. I mean, I'm afraid it might just be used as a big map, and, you know,
and
it won't involve the hacking whatsoever, but I hope that's not the case.
And I hope they actually use it and put a good use of the gamepad on this, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I guess this is the other problem. If it's going to be the worst-selling version, and that's nothing to do with the game's quality or about the Wii U quality, but just about the install base, then why... What incentive does Ubisoft have to put in additional effort? Not just moving, you know, creating the game for Wii U, but then creating all this stuff that the other games aren't going to have. I mean, unless Nintendo funds it, it doesn't seem like they got much incentive to do that rather than put a cheap map on there.
We shall see. I mean, Watch Dogs, I think, was it tentatively released for this spring, or did that get pushed back again?
I think they're being very vague now with the date. I don't think it's got a solid date, so I think it's just 2014 currently. I could be wrong.
Mm.
But it does look like a good game. Very good game. And I'm hoping that is the case.
So, we have our last question? Which
yeah.
I believe is from our new contributor and writer.
It is, yeah. But he emailed us in a question for the show, which is fantastic. So, thank you very much, Colin. So, yeah, this is from Colin Crompton. And he is the latest, I believe, in Fendo writer. And his question to the show is... With Nintendo working with Tecmo Koei on the Hyrule Warriors, do you see them trusting other developers with other franchises, such as Capcom and Metroid, maybe?
I am one who is gonna stop and say, let's not give Metroid to another developer right now. I mean, I'm one who actually liked... I did enjoy Other M. It just wasn't as... I was underwhelmed by it. I'm not gonna go into long detail about it, but I feel like, you know, let that be an example. It's like... I think it's time Nintendo should be handled internally for the foreseeable future. But Capcom, if it's a 2D Metroid, I'm all for it.
I was going to say, I mean, this. I know you just said about keeping it in-house, but what about Konami for handling the Metroid series?
How do they do that? See, I don't know how they do that, though.
Because obviously they have the experience with the Castlevania franchise.
But those things are kind of hit or miss, though, as far as, like, when it came to the 3D Castlevania series.
Okay. What about if it was for the 3DS and it was in 2D?
I probably would be down for it. I mean, I feel like if you're handling it to another developer, if it's on the 3DS and 2D, I'm all for it.
And oddly saying that, with the Capcom discussion earlier, obviously Capcom did some brilliant handling of the Zelda IP on portables.
They have done a good job, so, yeah, I mean...
If they can be trusted with Zelda...
No, this brings up whatever. Like, after the whole financial reports when it came out, there have been, like I said, there have been some wacky rumors, but it's one of which I saw in NeoJaf was about these rumors, which I'm not sure have any bit of a... They don't have any... I'm not sure if these don't have any legs, but one of them was this game called Pokken, which is essentially a Pokemon fighting game made by from the makers of Tekken.
Oh, no, I heard that rumor a little while back.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be too... bad to bring that out. I would like to see what it is.
Yeah, this is very bizarre. I think it was when the Pokemon Company did some video promo about the history of Pokemon, going through, you know, the Game Boy game and then into the, I guess, the Game Boy Color and the Game Boy Advance, and they went to the N64 and the GameCube games, and then it finally finished off with this trailer of these two Pokemon facing off against each other in these HD graphics. And everyone assumed it was some sort of teaser for a Wii U game. So it was obviously a lot more detailed than a 3DS game could be. But later on they came out and said it was just a yeah, example of what, you know, what sort of thing the future of Pokemon may hold opposed to any actual game they're working on. But yeah, a Pokemon fighting game would be quite bizarre. And that's something I guess Capcom could be in good hands to manage if that was the case, despite the name, which would suggest otherwise. So I think we've kind of talked quite a bit about the actual handling of specific IPs. In terms of the actual question regarding, do we reckon Nintendo's going to be doing more of this type of thing, lending out their IP to developers?
I think the way to get more the titles out, they're probably going to have to be branching those out because obviously internally developed games by Nintendo, they like to take their time on it. And obviously they're going to have to need more help to actually put these different franchises out. I mean, look at Next Level Games, which are now going to be a full first-party developer. And I'm looking forward to see what they actually do because they did a fantastic job on Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon. If this is the case, you know, you're going to see more of these collaborations, I think, and I feel like that's what we're going to see is a bit of a theme probably this year's E3, aside from maybe whatever Shigeru Miyamoto's new IP is going to be.
Yeah, I think it's probably the best hook they've got in drawing third parties in. If they can lend them their IP and say, oh, you can make a some sort of Zelda game or some sort of Mario game or some sort of Pokemon game, as long as they're, you know, there's proper cooperation between the companies and quality control and all the rest of it, that game will sell. Where, however, their whatever game they were going to make probably wouldn't to the current Nintendo audience, which owns a Wii U. So I agree with you. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more announcements, especially during E3, where we're going to have characters from familiar franchises and hopefully some which we haven't seen in a while being developed by companies other than Nintendo, because Nintendo's stretching themselves as much as they can anyway, creating the games they can. So yeah, I think we're going to see lots more of this, and I also think we're probably going to see one or two more kind of crossovers of franchises. Even though we already have, say, was it Fire Emblem Cross?
Shin Megami Tensei. Yeah, I'm still waiting word on that. I hope that's one that doesn't fall off the wayside and kind of disappears in obscurity. Same thing.
No, I think that's going to be one which is going to have a great E3 reveal video.
And another one being Yarn Yoshi, for instance. I'm like, whatever happened to that?
Yeah, I mean, I reckon that's going to be like a Nintendo Direct. Oh, this is Yarn Yoshi. It's out next month or something.
And speaking of directs, aren't we supposed to be getting one this month or some type of conference from Nintendo?
I don't think they've officially said anything. I think there's rumoured to be one. Yeah, I don't think there's any official word, but I guess there never is with Nintendo Directs, beyond we're doing one either now or tomorrow. Or when they did that weird one at the Louvre and they said, we've done one, it's here. So yeah, I think we're both in agreement that we're going to see more of these third-party IP partner
I
matchups.
think it's the most right way to do if you're having so much of a dry spell with your third-party software, and it's they're going to have to do that. But we have other things to worry about Nintendo, which leads us, I think, probably into the main course of this podcast.
Yeah, so we finally come to the meat and potatoes of the podcast, which we've been teasing about for the entire episode so far. So we finally arrived at the Nintendo Forecast Adjustment Report, and I guess anyone listening to this show is probably fully aware of kind of what's gone down. But just in case, let's break this down to you. So Nintendo has announced that they have made some adjustments to their forecast of how many Wii Us and 3DSs and software they will have sold by the end of the fiscal year, which is going to be the end of March 2014. So for Wii U, they have cut their predictions to from 9 million to 2.8 million. For the Wii U software, they've cut it from 38 million units to 19 million units. And on the 3DS side, they've cut their numbers from 18 million to 13.5
That's
million.
surprising as well. That's the number I feel like, even though it's sold so well. Yeah, 3DS was the best-selling system of 2013.
It was, yeah. And finally, even still, for the 3D software, they cut it from 80 million to 60 million. So it's bad news all round, at least according to Nintendo's own forecasts. I mean, we could get a little political here and say perhaps numbers were inflated for some particular reasons during this, but in terms of what the report actually tells us now, it's bad on all fronts, essentially, in terms of what they were expecting. And of course, because of all these unit numbers, this affects the profit they were planning to make. So I don't actually have the numbers actually in front of me now. However, it basically turns out they were expecting to make a fair-sized profit this year, and that's kind of reversed round to be a fair loss, which will make it the third loss in a row. So where do we start on this one?
Well, obviously we have to get out of the way. This is not that much good news, like really good news for the company. And as far as, well, on the Wii U side, I'm shocked. Like I said, I'm shocked that they cut the units as far as for the 3DS when it's been selling so well. But it's you kind of knew this was coming after what they sold in November. And I believe what they had sold in November was doubled what they had doubled in December as far as units, but yet it wasn't enough what they had. And in this case, though, it's really looking so much to the point where it's like, where does Nintendo go from now? And even Satoru Iwata even mentions it, saying like how we failed with this, and it took them this long to realize we realize this thing's not working right now. We're going to shake things up as far as like a business, like a new business strategy. And who knows what could that be? You know, are they going to redo their marketing? How they release games? Pricing on the Wii U Virtual Console and the eShop? It's all out there. And, you know, even people were thinking that Iwata would be resigning right now, thinking that this would probably be the case, which I would kind of feel like that's not going to happen.
So, yeah, Iwata has actually come out and said that that's not going to be the case. He's not going to be stepping down because of this. So he can be in a position to rectify the situation where he is. But these figures kind of make me to believe that initial 9 million was quite...
It was overly generous.
It was overly generous. But then again, it did have a fair launch. It was just after launch when everything went tits up, essentially.
Yes, I could say I would agree with you on that.
So I guess it was a hard one to call back in the day. Yeah, that didn't do so well. But if we move over to the 3DS side, as you said, best-selling hardware in America last year. However, even then, they still had to cut their forecasts for the system. That's a strange one. Maybe, so that one could be coined down more to kind of how the market reacted in general to video game systems during that year, because they definitely had a successful machine on their hands, outselling everything else. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe there was a bit of internal politics where they needed to kind of show off when they made this report, I guess almost a year ago, because they had those two losses already, that they were going to be making some considerable amount of money, and that's how they got to the inflated 18 million number. But it's hard to say where the 3DS went wrong, so because it seems like it's done incredibly well in terms of the amount of games which have come out for it, in terms of the reception and the press talking about it. The 3DS seems to be positive, and it's been selling pretty well worldwide. I guess it just hasn't been selling as well worldwide as it has in Japan. And Nintendo was expecting the outside Japan sales to pick up nearer to what Japan is doing currently. And I think they gave a similar statement to why the 3DS numbers were misaligned from that 18 million they stated initially.
Well, I mean, it seemed like from the half what we've seen from the media, though, is from fellow gaming media, is you had the half saying, like, okay, I get this with Michael Pachter, a friend from, you know, Wedbush's studio, like, well, the industry said, if I'm saying that right, Super analyst. Yes, Michael Pachter, super analyst. But, he was suggesting that Nintendo basically release all their content on PS4 and Xbox One temporarily until they roll out a new console. And in my own...
That's the worst strategy ever.
My thoughts, like, that's not going to happen. I mean, I don't know what you... Did you pull an idea out of the hat? It's like, well, third party's not going to go. Yes, do it temporarily. That will appease people while they make a new console. I mean, that's not going to get some...
That's the worst business move ever.
They're only going to get short-term game there, not long-term.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not suggesting it, but if you were to start selling games on other people's systems, you might as well stick to it at that point, because you're already incentivizing people going out and buying these really expensive other systems. Why are they going to buy yours when you're finally ready, when they're now invested in that infrastructure, and it already has Nintendo games they can go back to, especially as how Nintendo games are really good for going back. I mean, if they release, say, Mario Kart on, like, PS4 and Xbox One, I mean, how long could that game be played? I mean, and people not bothering about buying the next Mario Kart on the next Nintendo system?
Well, this brings up a question, though, for me, for both of us. Two questions, though. Do you think Nintendo is able to turn around in 2014? And two, how do you think they can do it?
Okay, I mean, first I think we need to define turn it around. Does this mean they make a profit, or just they meet their targets? They set themselves?
They meet their targets. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Maybe a little over.
I would hope they meet their targets. Because they don't really have much to lose at this point. Because if they come out in 3 months' time and say, next year we expect to sell 10 more million Wii U's, or, you know, or a number even higher than that, I don't think people are going to believe them after what's happened here. So I think they're going to have a very modest sales figures for Wii U. The 3DS sales may get even more inflated to try and balance that out. But yeah, I think they're going to have fairly modest Wii U forecasts, and I think they will achieve them on a very basic level.
And to me, it's all going to start up, but I feel like they're realizing things are going wrong. And that's the good thing, I feel like. They realize the failure in there, what they have done. It just realized the fact, like, okay, your third parties are leaving. All you have is Ubisoft to help you out. Your even great first-party titles aren't selling as well, like, which are being met with critical acclaim, aren't selling as well. And the thing is, that comes down to it, is, like, do you slash the price again? Or do you sell a different SKU with out the gamepad? It's going to have to get to that point where it's like, you need a really stronger first-party lineup to actually do this. And I think it all starts with marketing. They need to market this console to the point where they're saying, like, this is new console. Even though we've seen ads for that, which I found kind of laughable, but I don't know. Part of me thought, like, okay, this is a company that can survive a flop. They have so much as far as cash reserves to have that to survive. This has kind of gone beyond the fact of GameCubing it. This has gone to the point of almost trying to almost, like, keep a Dreamcast alive. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, previously people were saying that, you know, Nintendo could survive and just, as you just said, GameCube it. But at this point, they're not in as favorable a position the GameCube was. So it is very interesting. I'm not entirely sure what they can do to get themselves out of the situation. They do have lots of options, though. So one of the things you mentioned was kind of like almost a relaunch. So it's keeping the hardware the same. Maybe do a separate SKU without the gamepads and have obviously optimized the software so that can be in place and have additional gamepads ready to buy if they want to kind of upgrade the experience and get the gamepads features. However, then they've got even more marketing issues because they're struggling with letting people know what the Wii U is. So if they introduce another brand into the mix, like they kind of did with the 3DS and the 2DS.
And, yeah,
I think it's going to be such a mess if they got a Wii U and another Wii something.
It would be a, yeah.
And trying to distinguish between the two.
It'd be a bigger mess as it is. It brings so much to the parties for confusion, even to that casual market they just all has just left.
Yeah, so I think what they need to do is a good old fashioned, but not changing anything drastic, physical redesign of the system. Like what the Xbox 360 and the PS3 went through.
More likely the PS3, which was, I think, like, they need a relaunch and rebirth in the same vein as what they had, which Sony did with the PS3.
Oh, certainly, but I'm thinking, on a very basic level, they just need to make a new plastic box to stick the Wii U in terms of it needs to look different. The game pads could look the same. They could change it up as well a little bit, but I just think it needs to look like something different. And they can still call it Wii U, but the branding has to completely change. Maybe they even change the logo on the thing. I'm not sure at this point. But I think they really need to go all out with a brand new promo and just make people think like this is a new thing. And then they can really show off its current library, which even still isn't too bad compared directly to the two newest consoles. Because they're in a similar position, not sales-wise, but games-wise. They haven't had many games come out since those launch games back in November. And they're not getting any time soon either. I think the Xbox One gets Titanfall in March, maybe?
Yeah, it is March, it's late March or early April.
And the PS4 gets, I can't remember, they're getting a first party game around the same sort of time. But there's not much before then, and there's not much after then either. So even the third parties are still not quite ready to be pushing games out. So Nintendo does have a chance to at least help the Wii U and to get it in a much more stable position, to make it more like a GameCube type system in terms of stability and sales. And they just need to pour a load of money into marketing, and I think they do need to come out with a new box for it and possibly make it some sort of, I know we already have a premium SKU for the Wii U, but something above that, so they could potentially get some upgraders in place like they do with the DSs, really tug at that hardcore base as well as the new ones, and try and get a how the DS Lite really turned around the initial DS way back in the day. Because we all think that the DS was this huge success, but the initial model didn't really go down too well.
DS Fat.
Exactly, because it was big and bulky, and it looked like a Fisher-Price toy or something came from McDonald's, essentially. But then the DS Lite came out, and it was like really, it was like super sexy, like the iPods at the time. It was, you know, glossy white or glossy black. And they came out with these new TV adverts, and they came out with things like Brain Age and Nintendogs and all that sort of stuff around it. I think they need to do a launch in the same way they did for the DS Lite, but for the Wii U, whatever that will turn into. It's hard to say, but I think it's possible for them to turn it around, and I don't think they need to do anything crazy, like, you know, just completely axe it and, you know, start working on the next generation.
That would be
Nintendo box.
That would be the worst possible situation to do, which, unless the thing was just not selling.
I mean, even then, I think they just need to hold out for a little while. They just need to release games on it every now and again. Keep, obviously, concentrate more on the 3DS. But I think the worst thing to do, and I agree with you, is just to come out and say, oh, the Wii U, that was a mess. Try this. This is new from us.
Yeah.
They just need to let the dust settle on that one and just take the normal course of action. Maybe they can speed things up a year or so than they were going to initially, but they can't just cut this like in half or really early like now. They just need to ride out because they are the biggest provider of their own games for the platform. It's not going to affect the owners the actual owners of the system too much.
And not only that, it's... You hear those articles clamoring from the go third party, but here's the thing. Nintendo's at the best when they have no other rules to follow by. You know, yes, they have that quirky hardware, and that when they, even with that quirky hardware, they're free to do whatever they want. You put them in third party, I feel like they don't have that much freedom to be creative.
No, I agree with you. A lot of third party games do feel similar, especially in terms of how they all seem to be designed to have checkboxes. And this is going to sound a bit contradictory because it's probably something I myself complain about. But in terms of the fact that, say, I guess it's for PlayStation and Xbox nowadays, but they all seem to need some sort of online mode or online multiplayer mode, and they need to connect into the achievement systems and all that sort of thing.
That as well, and you know, do something with the OS. You've got a great thing with the Miiverse, but I just think it just needs to have that oomph that we get from trophies and achievements, even though I'm not so much of an achievement whore as some people like to see that. It just, things need to change, these little things, and I feel like Nintendo is in their way of trying to figure things out. We don't know what that business strategy is going to be, but all I know is, it seems like I say this like a broken record, another make or break year for the company.
Yeah, they seem they've had a lot of those recently. In terms of drastic moves Nintendo could make, I'm not sure what it could be, but I'm thinking it's possible they could pull a third pillar strategy.
This, I was interested to see what you were saying about.
So I'm not entirely sure what form it would take. It's a fairly safe move in the sense that it doesn't disrupt what they're currently doing. If they did introduce this new, like, portable-esque device, so it could be their own take on like a iPod Touch, which exclusively plays Nintendo stuff, but it just kind of goes after a new market, and it's something which is actually pocketable And maybe it could have, borrow some features from the 3DS, like as Street Pass, and they could synchronize up. Or it could be something like the Vita TV. So it's a little box you plug up to your TV and you get to stream your DS games to it. And maybe it uses the Wii U or it doesn't use the Wii U for that service. But I think they're going to try and sell some extra hardware. So it's either going to be some sort of third pillar strategy or some really enticing upgrade to the Wii U in sense of not like an attachment you bolt onto it, but just maybe it was like a system which has like a 500 gig hard drive in it. And maybe it has, maybe they incorporate the two and it can play 3DS games or something. And that's all built in. Or you can have a version where it's a box you plug up to it. But I think they're going to try and sell some profitable hardware this year without cutting off what they're currently doing. But I have no idea what that is.
I don't see that happening, but I can see what you're kind of going at. But didn't that third pillar strategy when they had with the GameCube, the DS, and the Game Boy Advance, the Game Boy line essentially just kind of merged with the DS brand?
Oh, it did in the end, but it was kind of like a fail-safe option. Because though if the DS did just flop, then they haven't lost anything in that particular brand, because what was the DS at that point? They didn't really have much to lose. But the fact it did kick off, it means they could ease off on that Game Boy brand, and it was so successful that they just decided to replace it entirely. So I think it's something they could try, because they want to, they weren't going to have a profitable year, and Nintendo makes most of their money traditionally by selling hardware. And they're not getting any money currently from selling the Wii U. I mean, even on a per-unit basis, they're making a loss on the thing. So I think they're going to try and sell something. And it might just be as simple as we're going to have another 3DS revision. We're going to have the 3DS Lite, and it could be that. But I think we're going to have something to get people to buy Nintendo hardware just in case it's not the Wii U. They're going to want to be selling stuff additional to the 3DS.
And this is not... I mean... We shall see how this goes. It's going to be an interesting world how Nintendo answers this, or if they keep in their stubborn ways.
And I'd also like to point out that I don't think I've had a single prediction right so far, so don't take
my actual predictions. Are you kidding me? I haven't had one at all lately. I mean, I'm still demanding a new Metroid, and I'm still not getting that.
I'm really hoping for E3, and I do have a sinking suspicion we will do. I mean, hopefully... I don't want to go down this particular rabbit hole, but... chasing after what Retro's doing. I mean, obviously we know they're doing Donkey Kong, but for a long time we were really wanting to see what they were doing because we didn't know. And we'll probably be jumping straight back into that time frame once they finish up Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. But I'm hoping we see what the next project is at E3.
I hope so too. But, this was expected. It's all in Nintendo's hands now. Or one could say it's in our hands to answer that call.
Is indeed, and it also just shows how good it is that the 3DS is doing well. I mean, if the 3DS still wasn't doing well like it initially wasn't, then Nintendo would be in pretty bad state now. But thankfully they do, which means that is actually bringing them in a lot of money, despite it being a net negative currently. But I'm just saying the situation would be a lot worse if that wasn't the case. But yeah, although it's bad for Nintendo, it's also exciting times. In terms of what is Nintendo going to do? As you said, they've come out and said that they are unable to produce or be a failure at consoles. They are going to have to rethink their very basic strategy of building a home console together and selling it for a traditional home console price what they usually do. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to change that, but they're going to have a serious think about if that's the right strategy going forwards. That's quite exciting for me. Just because they're really going to think this from the ground up, and I think that's the sort of situation they did, which came up with the Wii initially.
Be it you want them to go third party, or even smartphones, which I will go on and say that, yes, there's money out there, but go to the smartphone initiative when you come to, your eShop pricing. I mean, a lot of these old school NES or Super Nintendo titles shouldn't be priced the way they are. Offer them up at, a $1 or $2. You'd be able to see more profit from that and more incentive to buy them. And as far as putting games on, even Iwata mentioned to whatever, they have no plans to put any of their properties on smartphones. And the thing that comes down to it, I don't think they would work. It just comes down to precision controls when you see those old 2D platformers. I saw Mega Man X on the iOS like and Android store on there. I got excited even though it was like being sold for $4, but I realized, wait a minute, why would I want to control this with just a touchscreen? You don't. It's near impossible. I wouldn't beat Chill Penguin on the first try with a touchscreen.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're finishing the show up, but I remember, I think it was, they released Mega Man 2 as one of Capcom's very first iOS games many, many years ago. Because it was a kind of a novelty at the time, it's something I picked up. It's the fact that from the get-go, they let you enable like a god mode where you don't take damage. I think says a lot for that that version of that game.
Hand-holding, iOS style, there you go.
We know this game is barely playable with these controls, so here, we'll let you not take damage or not die, whatever the mode was, so you can actually get through the game. And I think that's a good as any note to finish this feature on, and then the show itself. Okay, as always, if you've got any questions or comments you want to send our way, like we've had several on today's show, you can send them to us in a variety of ways. If you're on the website, you can scroll down and hit the comments box. You can also email them to us at contact@infendo.com. Additionally, you can send us a Miiverse post like we've had here today. My Miiverse name is Luvsion, which is L-E-U-V-S-I-O-N. Harrison, what's your Miiverse handle?
Mine is Hybrid Meta, and it's spelled H-Y-B-R-I-D as in dog, and M-E-T-A, all one word.
Okay, fantastic. So yeah, if you can send in your questions and comments, please do. It's really great when we do actually get to go through your questions. It does bring up a nice variety to the show. And with that, thank you very much for listening, and this has been Infendo Radio.
See you, everybody.
See you later.